In the world of manufacturing, change is the only constant. How are small and medium-sized manufacturers, SMMs, to keep up with new technologies, regulations, and other important shifts, let alone leverage them to become leaders in their industries? Shifting Gears, a podcast from CMTC, highlights leaders from the modern world of manufacturing, from SMMs to consultants to industry experts. Each quarter, we go deep into topics pertinent to both operating a manufacturing firm and the industry as a whole. Join us to hear about the manufacturing sector's latest trends, groundbreaking technologies, and expert insights to help SMMs in California set themselves apart in this exciting modern world of innovation and change. I'm Greg Profesich, Director of Advanced Manufacturing Technologies at CMTC, and I'd like to welcome you. In this episode, I'm joined by Matthew McKenney, President and CEO of the Institute for American Apprenticeships, and Mace Gehrman, the Technical Training Manager for Peterson Caterpillar. Matthew and Mace offer their perspectives on apprenticeships and explain why we should think of it as a quality workforce development program. We discuss the organizational impacts of starting an apprenticeship program, as well as the resources for those looking to adopt and the benefits of implementation. Welcome, Matthew. It's great to have you here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about apprenticeship today.
Absolutely. Matthew, can you take just a minute or two and tell me a little bit about your experience with apprenticeship programs?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, I should share that I was an apprentice. So that's how I gained some of my skill set. So I'm a believer from that perspective. But for the last 14 years, I've worked in the apprenticeship space and helped Hypotherm, an employer, develop an apprenticeship program that's put almost 700 people through it, or more than 700 people through it at this point.
Excellent. So it's a great firsthand experience you'll be able to share with us today. Looking forward to it. And Mace, welcome. I'm happy you could join us today also. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and your experiences?
Yeah, thank you, Greg and CMTC. Appreciate the opportunity. I'm the training manager with Peterson Caterpillar. 20 years ago, we were working with San Joaquin Delta College and Stockton, California, and some other CAT dealers trying to start a training program. And it was the staff at San Joaquin Delta that said, what you're talking about is apprenticeship. You need us to help you get your program recognized by the state of California, Department of Labor, as an apprenticeship. And so I was involved from day one 20 years ago.
Oh, fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation. I think we're going to have some great examples and some great insights to share. So let's get started. Today, to set the stage for our conversation, let's lay out the definition of what an apprenticeship program exactly is. I think it changed over time, and people think of union apprenticeships and apprenticeships back in the Middle Ages and things like that. What are we talking about exactly here today when we say apprenticeships?
When I think about apprenticeship and I talk to people about apprenticeship, what I want people to think is that it's a quality workforce development solution, right? If you have a need for talent, apprenticeship is a framework that can be built around a training program that can offer you the talent you need. Apprenticeship has to have five hallmarks. It has to have employment. That's the thing we love about apprenticeship, is employment is a requirement. It has to have related instruction, on-the-job training, mentoring. And then it has to have scheduled wage increases throughout the program. And really, those five hallmarks are what define an apprenticeship. So to your point, there's a lot of, I would even call it stigma around apprenticeship related to the fact that it has to be this audacious program that is large and unmanageable. It's really focusing on those five key hallmarks that can make any apprenticeship work.
Mace, anything to add to Matthew's perspective?
Well, I think Matthew did make a very important point about the five hallmarks of apprenticeship. When we looked at doing this, there was a very high level of concern on our administration of our company about inviting the state of California in getting them involved in training our entry-level technicians. But once we looked at it, we realized we were already doing those five things for our entry-level technicians anyhow. We were almost running an apprenticeship without the actual recognition. And so ultimately, it became a very easy decision for us to enter into an apprenticeship agreement.
So it's not going to be uncommon for companies to look at those five hallmarks and say, we're doing three or four or five of them already. We just don't have it formalized and structured, is what I kind of hear you guys saying.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
In fact, I would take it a step further and say most, if not all, employers are participating in those five hallmarks to some extent. They just may not see it that way.
In today's labor market, I'd say a company involved in the trades is going to have a very hard time attracting and retaining employees if they're not involved in those five hallmarks.
Okay, good to know. Thank you.
So as you talk about apprenticeship programs and the five hallmarks, you know, a lot of people may have the sense that, you know, I know a plumber who was an apprentice and then a journeyman and working towards master, and you worked up through a union scale. Is it always a union thing, or are there apprenticeships outside of union organizations?
I'd say that's a common misconception, that it has to be tied to or run by a union. Many apprenticeships are, and as you say, a plumber, people be aware of that. But in our apprenticeship for Caterpillar service technicians, for example, which was started by a consortium of six Caterpillar dealers, only two were union and four were not. So apprenticeship does not have to be tied to union. It just has to be tied to the five standards we discussed.
Mace, I think the point you bring up is good, that actually apprenticeship can be applied in organizations that have represented employees and employees that are not represented as well, too. So that if you bring the union to the table and have those discussions, it can exist in organizations that have both populations, which I think is important because a lot of people don't think that that can happen either. I would also add to that that apprenticeship isn't just for the traditional trade. So I think another sort of misconception people have is that it's really for the skill-based trades. And there are a lot of more modern, non-traditional apprenticeships out there that are in the software and IT space. Most recently, there's been an occupation registered for a human resources specialist. So apprenticeship can span sort of almost any job or role as long as the occupation is defined and somebody's interested in registering it.
Excellent. So it comes off the shop floor and can go into the back office and other aspects of the organization.
Correct.
So let's talk a little bit about your personal experiences. When you started your first apprenticeship program, I know, Matthew, you came up through one, but when you made the transition to starting to run them, what was the situation you experienced that led you to get started there? What was the situation that said, okay, we really need to do this, we need to formalize this? Mace, you can start off, because I think you already kind of touched on it a little bit.
So at Peterson, we had three critical needs for service technicians. The first one was we were getting fewer and fewer people looking to become entry-level technicians. They just didn't seem to have the access or the awareness or the encouragement to look at going into our trade. Apprenticeship gave us a format in which to go out and recruit more aggressively. The other thing with virtually every industry, the explosion of technology has required that our technicians learn a lot more skills a lot faster, so that then they reach what we would call a journey level in 4 years. They, in fact, are totally qualified. And the apprenticeship training, both in the classroom and on the job, has allowed us to really accelerate their learning. And the last thing is we have a large investment in onboarding and training an entry-level technician. And one of the things that apprenticeship has delivered for us is a much higher level of successful completion and also much higher retention rate. So we get a lot better ROI on our investment.
Matthew, what was your experience?
Yeah, so at Hypotherm 14 years ago, they were experiencing significant growth. And to keep up with that demand, they were actually doubling the size of their CNC machine capacity to make the consumables for the plasma cutters that they make. Mm-hmm. That was going to require them to hire 60 machine operators. Hypotherm's main location or primary location is in Lebanon and Hanover, New Hampshire. That's a rural area of New England. So finding people that have that skill set at that rate, there was no way that that talent existed. Like, they knew they weren't going to be able to hire, so they had to find a way to build. And the way in which we found to build at the time is we stumbled across an organization called the Institute for American Apprenticeship that had a training program for CNC machinists leveraging apprenticeship that employers could sign up to sponsor graduates, meaning you had to hire the person. They were going to go through this training, and when they graduated, they had the skills. We participated in a couple of classes and experienced the model of apprenticeship through an intermediary, which is the way a lot of organizations get introduced to apprenticeships, and as a result, decided to move that training internal to Hypotherm and built what was called the Hypotherm Technical Training Institute, that ultimately is where all the training for the apprenticeship takes place. So now that somebody, when they come to work at Hypotherm, they don't need any skills as a CNC machinist. They spend 10 weeks in a classroom and lab learning the basics, and then they move out onto the shop floor with their mentor to complete their apprenticeship. And again, that's for 14 years served as a pipeline for growth at Hypotherm and provided the machinists they've needed. to stay local. 90% of the manufacturing for Hypotherm, which is a global organization, ships product over 60 countries, takes place right in New Hampshire. So it's allowed them to build a pipeline. It's absolutely how they've sustained sort of that pipeline.
Those are some impressive results, and it makes a lot of sense. You have to be able to develop people that you have nearby. So it sounds like an apprenticeship was a really powerful tool and has had lasting value to Hypotherm.
I would agree. I think one of the things that we didn't know when we were building it, and it's been sort of a silver lining, it's also enabled accessibility to that role and that skill set for people that otherwise wouldn't have been able to have it. So people have come through the Hypotherm Technical Training Institute from all walks of life and a variety of skill sets that wouldn't have considered becoming a CNC machinist otherwise. And that's one of the things that we really value about the program.
So people entering the program there, do they have to have any basic skills, any kind of certificates, any kind of previous training?
No. So we do a level of aptitude assessment, meaning they have to have the aptitude and willingness to learn it. So there are thresholds, right? From a mathematics perspective, they have to meet a certain threshold, but they don't have to have any machining skills. That all gets taught at the Institute.
Excellent. Okay. Impressive program. So in putting your apprenticeship program together, what steps did you take and whom did you rely on for support and assistance?
Yeah, as I previously mentioned, we were working with a group of other California CAT dealers to start a training program with the support of CAT Inc. at San Joaquin Delta College in Stockton, California. And we ran into an issue right away. In California, you cannot close classes off in most cases to the general student body. We couldn't offer our very specific Caterpillar service technician training courses and have it only for the students, the apprentices from those dealers. And it was fine. It was the apprenticeship coordinator that they went and got and brought to our meeting. And he said, "You're describing apprenticeship. This is exactly what you need to do." And so really the college held our hand and walked us straight through it. And the California Department of Apprenticeship Standards was very helpful. And it all came together very quickly. And then after the fact, that same coordinator said, "You've already done 95% of the work to also be recognized by the Federal Department of Labor. Let's go ahead and finish that off." And that's how our apprenticeship came to be recognized both by California and the Federal Department of Labor.
Excellent. So it sounds like it was you were most of the way there. You just didn't know how to connect the dots or didn't know the dots could be connected to add some more value.
Correct.
So, Matthew, you mentioned a little while ago about your involvement with the IAA, the Institute for American Apprenticeships, and some of their help. But go a little deeper on some of the steps maybe that it took as the apprenticeship program was starting out 14 or so years ago, as you mentioned.
Yeah. So Hypotherm, when they decided that they wanted to do apprentice CNC machinists, ultimately had to register the occupation, right? So we worked closely with the state of New Hampshire. We worked with an intermediary, as you stated, which was IAA. And they helped us draft Hypotherm standards that were registered with the state. They were incredibly helpful at the state level and the USDOL. We got our standards registered with the occupation of CNC machinist as part of that standard. Hypotherm has since added several occupations to that standard, but we started with the CNC machinist. Once that was registered, we worked with the local community college to get the related instruction needed for the apprenticeship. You don't always have to use an external entity for the training, but in this case, we did because it was to our advantage. So they helped us build the related instruction. We built an on-the-job training model. So we framed out what the mentorship program and the training model would look like on the job for the work experience. The interesting part about that is it very closely aligned with the training that we were doing on the shop floor already. Most organizations are ISO certified and are required to maintain some level of training documentation. It's a matter of understanding that that training documentation aligns with the needs of an apprenticeship, and we just implemented it. So once we had all of the sort of process lined up and we were bringing apprentices in, it was really just a matter of recruiting people, getting them through the training, and then making sure they were getting the mentoring they needed and the documentation was in place, and we were off and running.
Excellent. So both of you have mentioned a few times now certification levels. I know, Mace, you mentioned the state and then the Department of Labor. What's the importance? What's the significance of having that registration or certification and complying with those standards? Matthew, why don't you start off on that one?
Sure. One of the great things about registering your apprenticeship is that people get a credential that's portable, meaning if your program's registered with the USDOL, and most programs are registered with the USDOL, but some states, not all, but some states have a state apprenticeship agency, which is an agent of the USDOL. But that's a choice that states make. But that certificate is a benefit to the apprentice, meaning, you know, if I'm a CNC machinist and I have completed my apprenticeship and I have this certificate, and then for some reason I'm going to move, you know, maybe my spouse got a job on the West Coast and I live on the East Coast, that credential is portable, meaning you, if you apply for a job and you show the employer that you have a USDOL certificate or you're an apprentice, that credential carries some weight and you can't get that without registering with USDOL. The other benefit is oftentimes registered programs align with federal and state grant funding to help offset or provide incentives to the employer that make these programs more affordable. And oftentimes that's critical for employer needs because these are expensive. They're big investments in individuals. They're good investments. And people that have apprenticeships recognize that that investment is important. And actually Mace talked about sort of retention and higher skill set. You know, those are key elements of apprenticeship. But those offsets are also important and beneficial, and that's another reason why you'd register.
Yeah, I think that training often has that two-edged sword, and you get different perspectives on it. And it's the old saying, right? What if we train our people and they leave? And worse yet, what if we don't train our people and they stay type of thing, right? So I think you guys are kind of echoing around that. But let's talk a little bit more about retention. Does it forge a deeper relationship and kind of loyalty when, you know, an employee knows that the company is investing in them and upping their skills and upping their wages along the way on a structured way that goes with it? You know, I'm investing in you because, you know, this is a partnership. Are there elements of that that come out of apprenticeships?
So I believe there are, and I can talk specifically to Hypotherm. Hypotherm's turnover rate is less than 5%, which is actually amazing. But I think the other thing to know about apprenticeships is those credentials can be stackable. So they can be there can be an entry-level apprenticeship. And at Hypotherm, they built an advanced machining apprenticeship that once somebody finished and got their journey worker certificate as an apprentice in the entry-level machinist role, they could move on to sort of, we'll call it the programmer role, and enter into another apprenticeship and get their training. So retention typically comes through the ability for someone to see that they have a career path and can develop. And with an 80% success rate, meaning more than 80% of the people that enter these programs graduate and are successful, they move through the programs and gain a skill set and then often stay. I think the other piece of it is apprenticeship programs also build skill sets that didn't exist before, meaning oftentimes people didn't have the skills when they came into the role. So even if they leave, there's a shortage everywhere for these skill sets. So it's, you know, it builds momentum and it builds a skilled workforce. Now, selfishly, the organizations that are running apprenticeship programs want to keep those people and do a lot of creative things to do it. But if they leave, you've also created somebody that goes off into the world and provides value someplace else with a skill set that they didn't have before they started.
You hit it. It's retention and it's engagement. We hire entry-level technicians from five main areas. One is our apprenticeship. The second is from community college diesel programs. The third is typically for-profit trade schools. We actively recruit military veterans. And we get technicians, entry-level technicians, applying us that are already in the industry but see the advantage of working at the Caterpillar dealer. And we've carefully tracked the retention in each of those five areas. And our apprenticeship is about 50% better retention than any of the other four. So our investment is rewarded. And as we brought up, mentoring and the on-the-job learning are such a critical part of apprenticeship. Well, it's that mentoring and on-the-job learning where you create your engagement. And like all employers, we occasionally have an apprentice, some before, some after they journey out and get their certificates that leave and move elsewhere. And sometimes our managers are frustrated by that. But the point I try to make is if they've been with us for 4 years and we've failed to engage them, we need to look at ourselves and not them, potentially.
That's a good point. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the effect on organizations of apprenticeships. People in every organization react differently to change. Tell us a little bit about how the program was received in your organization, and what did you have to do to achieve buy-in from your managers and from your employees?
As was the case with Hypotherm, change, there was resistance to it. Because if you think about it, you know, there was already a population of people in the organization that could run CNC equipment and had been in the shop and developed, you know, sort of a culture and understood the processes. And this program was bringing people that didn't have any experience prior, so ultimately wouldn't have been qualified for the role, putting them through a training program, and then they'd come out on the manufacturing floor. And what's interesting is, from a technical aptitude perspective, what we immediately started to notice is that the people that came through the apprenticeship understood conceptually what was happening out there more than many of the people that had been running the equipment for many, many years. Because those people were trained on the job only and not given any of the instruction or really taught the why something happens. It's more about they knew how to make good parts, but they didn't understand why or how it was happening. And as technology evolves, that happens a lot, right? Like people just get familiar with their role and the technology around them changes, but they don't fully understand why or what the changes are. So it was interesting because at first there was resistance, and then obviously the organization and the people working in manufacturing saw the value in the fact that these individuals or graduates could do the job. But then suddenly there was this want from the incumbents to also want to experience the training because they wanted to gain the education as well. And actually in 2009, during the downturn, one of the things that Hypotherm did, because Hypotherm has a no layoff philosophy, they're a pretty amazing organization. They actually took that opportunity when business was slower to pull the incumbents off the floor and put them through the training so they could get the skills and experience it as well. And now there isn't anybody on the manufacturing floor at Hypotherm that hasn't been through the Hypotherm Technical Training Institute and gotten that experience. So it took time. It was a continuum. There was resistance up front and we did have our challenges. And then there was that sort of recognition of value. It was certainly filling the need and has continued to do so. But then it got to the extent that it was showing so much value that the people that had, the incumbents that had been there for a long time actually requested the training and were able to take it.
Wow. So it sounds like you went through all the five stages of change, often called the five stages of grief, right?
Right.
That whole human emotional cycle. It sounds like the organization and different people, it sounds like in the organization, went through different parts of it at different times.
Right. It took 10 years, but I aged 20.
Okay. So Mace, I'll ask you the same question. Organizations do react differently to change. How was the program received by your organization as you developed it?
Well, first I'd say we were very lucky. We're a privately held company, and the owner of our company made it clear that he was a huge supporter and had a lot of confidence in this program from day one. And he expressed that buy-in to the management. And that, of course, has a big effect in a privately held company. I would say most of our managers were already pretty much engaged with coaching and mentoring and development of entry-level technicians. And so for them, it was very easy. And actually, they appreciated the additional support they got from myself and our department and the apprenticeship coordinator we had outside our company. We had a few managers that were more go in the deep end of the pool and sink or swim. But that doesn't work in today's world with the competition for good labor. And so I'd say those managers ended up needing some coaching and mentoring and development, which ultimately was successful. The second thing I'd share is just our employees on the floor are the peers of the apprentices. The absolutely number one comment, I can't tell you how many times I've heard it in 20 years, is where was this program when I came up? They see the education tuition free. They see the tooling that we provide the apprentices. They see the uniforms, the coaching, mentoring, support. And they're just like, it wasn't like that when I came up 30 years ago. So that shows a lot of buy-in from the point of the peers of the apprentices. They really see what a good situation they're in.
Yeah, because they get employees that are equally skilled and easier to work with, right? And it's not like the experienced guys have to make up for the poorly trained or untrained ones. They come out of an apprenticeship fully trained and able to stand shoulder to shoulder.
Absolutely. And we provide our experienced journey and master level technicians the time required to coach and mentor the apprentices when it's needed. So they're not feeling under pressure that they're falling behind on their job while helping the new person with theirs. But you know what we do see a lot of? Those employees are the ones that are bringing us their next door neighbor, their son or daughter, their cousin. I talked to somebody today that one of his nephews already has gone through the program and works for us, been very successful, and now he wants to meet with another one of his nephews to see about getting him in the program. So that's where we've seen that engagement.
Yeah, and that really speaks volumes of the value, doesn't it? When, you know, it's almost so such a great experience, I want people I know and love and close to me to go through it too. I mean, that speaks volumes about the value. So let's talk a little bit now about measurements. What measurements did you look at to gauge success, and what were the results of the implementation of your program?
So for SkillGap, we use an industry recognized skill and knowledge assessment. And each of the apprentices completes that assessment in their first week at school in the apprenticeship so that we can create a baseline. And then each apprentice completes it again 2 years later in their last week of their fifth and final semester. And that allows us to measure just in terms of skills and knowledge what they've gained in the program. And it allows us to identify a specific area. Maybe our apprentices in this class have made a tremendous amount of progress in diesel engines and electronics and powertrains, but have struggled with air conditioning. And that allows us then to visit with the instructor at the college and review the materials being used in air conditioning and maybe come up with some suggestions, maybe provide some better training aids, whatever it needs to improve in that one area. The good news is those assessments have shown that on average, our apprentices after 2 years measure equal to what's expected of a journey level technician with 5 to 6 years experience. The other thing we do is then we track their on the job progress after graduation, because all the education is front loaded into the first 2 years. But after they graduate, they continue in the apprenticeship for two more. It's a 4-year apprenticeship. And we find in our apprenticeship, those technicians reach the highest level of technician skill faster than any others. Typically, that's becoming a field service technician, where you get a truck and you actually go out to the job sites by yourself to take care of and repair equipment, or reach the level which we test, which is called master technician. And our apprentices get there faster than any other way we train entry-level techs.
You know, I think I shared initially with the apprenticeship program starting at Hypotherm that there was a need for 60 people and it filled that gap. I also think skill set or the need for skill set has grown over time at Hypotherm, and the training, not just the initial apprenticeship, but the upskilling programs that also leverage apprenticeship have allowed them to keep up with the needs. The most recent example, Hypotherm has started to automate many of their CNC machining cells, meaning not just assembly, but even the moving of parts is done with a lot of automation. And what they needed was technicians for that automation. So that, you know, automation was relatively new, let's say in the last 5 years to Hypotherm, and getting more and more prevalent. So they leveraged an apprenticeship to do that. They took production support technicians, which are the technicians that typically were working on the CNC equipment. They enrolled them in an apprenticeship that was designed or essentially focused on the skill set of mechatronics, which is automation. And they've been able to bring people up to speed internally that wanted the opportunity. And the thing that's important about that is that the skill set available or the opportunity to post outside for that role and hire people, they weren't able to find it. So, you know, they can build 5 for every 1 they can hire. And that is an amazing lever to be able to pull internally when you have people that want the skill set and are willing to learn it versus having to go out and buy the talent, because buying the talent is becoming an expensive game these days. And even if everybody was going to try to buy it, there's still not enough. So you've got to find ways to build the talent you have and find ways to on-ramp people that want to learn it. And, I think that I love Mace's example with the technicians, because it sounds like they're really accomplishing that, right? People are moving through the levels, they're getting the support, and they're meeting the needs of their organization. And that is an amazing example and the power of apprenticeship.
I think you both are saying some very powerful things. Looking at the statistics the other day, I think the projections from the Census Bureau are that we'll have 3.5 million unfilled manufacturing jobs over the next decade. So if an apprenticeship program can help me retain and enrich the lives of my loyal and current employees, that's got to be incredibly valuable.
I would agree. And I think the thing I would add to that too is if you're an organization, the smaller sized organization that doesn't feel like you have the internal capacity to build an apprenticeship, there are resources out there that help you. There are intermediaries that are out there focused on specific skill sets that will help you build an apprenticeship, provide the training that you need. And again, you may qualify for some of the offsets that are out there or incentive funds that will help you pay for some of that training. we do a lot of work in the state of California. California is a state that invests heavily in training, and there's lots of opportunities out there. And we help small businesses that only need two apprentices. And then we help them build a program in and around that. And they leverage intermediaries and find ways to get offsets for training and still build the skills they need. So I think it can be scaled down to a small business, and it can be really successful in a large organization, but it looks different.
Excellent. Mace, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. As part of our involvement in apprenticeship, I'm actually currently the co-chair of our JATC, Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee. And yeah, there are companies within our JATC represented, like Peterson with 1,500 employees, but there's also very small employers with 6 employees, but they need one more. And so they're participating in the apprenticeship with just a single apprentice. And for them, it's just as critical to their success as a larger number of apprentices is to ours.
Okay. And so apprenticeships can apply to any size organization. And if we get back to those 5 hallmarks, I'm probably doing many of them anyway. It's just a matter of adding the structure around it is what I heard you say earlier.
Yeah.
And so it can apply to any size organization. No organization is too small.
Agreed.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit in a little different direction. I think both of you are involved in organizations related to developing and promoting apprenticeships. What are some of the common objections that you hear? What's your response and your experience to that objection?
Well, you know, I previously alluded to the fact that on the part of ownership, there was concern about getting the state of California and or the federal government more involved in our day-to-day operations. But like I said before, ultimately, when we looked at what those organizations would require of us, we realized we were already doing it. And so I'd say after 20 years, it's almost transparent to us that the apprenticeships are ultimately administered and overseen by the state of California and the Federal Department of Labor. I think I also mentioned earlier that in this very tight labor market, you mentioned the millions of unfilled manufacturing jobs. Employers really can't stay afloat if they're not doing the 5 hallmarks we've talked about, because that's just what it takes to keep employees and keep them moving forward.
Yeah, I think some of the things that intimidate employers, so there is an administrative burden, especially if you're new to it. There's some tracking that has to be done. There's some reporting that has to be done on apprentice related to progress. But if you seek to understand, and oftentimes if you reach out to the resources that exist, both at the state level, at the federal level, and there's obvious, there's lots of other professional organizations that can help. They can help you navigate that. There's cost associated with it. I think that's at times a barrier. Apprenticeship can be complex depending on what type of organization you have and what state you're in, right? That they look a little different from state to state. So again, having somebody help you understand the landscape can really clarify a lot of those things. From my personal experience at Hypotherm, we structured the first program at sort of a large scale because it was filling an immediate need. And we built a program, we had an institute, and it was incredibly successful. One of the challenges we had getting any traction with a new apprenticeship at Hypotherm after that is when we used the word apprenticeship, everybody fell into the sort of perception all apprenticeship had to be that big, that all of those things had to exist, and they really don't, right? If you want to start an apprenticeship with one person and you've identified the related instruction and you understand how they're going to get trained on the job and you have a mentor, that's really all you need. So it doesn't have to be done at a grand scale. And if I had it to do over, I might have started smaller. So people would have understood that apprenticeship can be very agile and it can fit a need of just one very specific skill set, or it can be an answer to a very broad need as well. And that's both inside small organizations and large.
Well, the opposite, maybe a Matthews organization, we would just start bigger. We started pretty small. We were a little unsure how this was going to work and that the return on investment we would get. And once we started to see that, we immediately started increasing the ante. We started recruiting much more aggressively. And we raised our apprenticeship classes just for Peterson up to about 12 more apprentices rather than 4.
You know, the thing I think I would share is that apprenticeship can be a viable career pathway. And it's often considered an alternative to going to college, but it doesn't have to be just an alternative. You can do both. You know, The amazing thing about an apprenticeship is, A, you're going to earn and learn. So you're going to have a job and you're going to earn some money. You're also going to learn a valuable skill set. And in many organizations, that can be built upon. So you can either take that experience and choose to go to college yourself, if that's what you want to do. You can take that experience and you can build and stack credentials as it relates to apprenticeship and find a meaningful career in a trade that is going to pay you very well. There's a huge need for many of these skill sets. But I think it should be looked at as a more viable alternative. It's the path I took. So, you know, I might be biased in that sense. But I see a lot of young people trying to make a decision about what their career is going to be. And apprenticeship is a mechanism to, A, ensure that you're employed.
Mm-hmm.
You get education and a skill set. And I think the mentorship piece is amazing because you get to learn the job from somebody that's got the experience.
Mm-hmm.
You still have options. There are so many apprenticeships available across the country that can pay up to six-figure salaries that I think it should be something that's talked about more and considered when you're thinking about what your future is and what your work life is going to be post-education.
Excellent points. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that I think we need to keep that top of mind because in the manufacturing world, there is a huge gap in terms of skilled workers that are qualified for the roles that are out there. And apprenticeships certainly are one mechanism to help fill that gap and to get people engaged in that career path. In summary, I think I just kind of want to go through a couple of things that I picked up. When we think about apprenticeships, we should really think about it as a quality workforce development program. And an apprenticeship is going to have five hallmarks: employment, related instruction, on-the-job training, mentoring, and structured wage increases that go along with it. And apprenticeships can apply to either represented and non-represented employees, and they can be at any role, not just trades, which I found kind of interesting and I think will be interesting to our listeners. In terms of standards and registrations with state and federal agencies, that registration allows the apprentice to have a portable credential and also allows the employer in many cases to access funding at the federal or state level to assist in the creation of an administration of an apprenticeship program. And in terms of a career path, it's very valuable to employees having an apprenticeship program because it offers a career path to employees within your organization. I may get one credential and will take one apprenticeship program, and then after a few years decide I want to take another one and move within the organization. Across the board, we're looking at least an 80% success rate, strong retention, and really strong engagement of employees that go through a program. In terms of the organizational impacts of starting an apprenticeship program, there's always resistance to change to different levels, but apprenticeships are often prove their effectiveness very quickly. One of the keys to that change process working quickly is the management commitment. And, you know, walking the walk and talking the talk about supporting that. In terms of results, reduction in time for people to learn the essential competencies and have the essential competencies and expertise in a given job. Upskilling, job flexibility, upward mobility, lots of different results that come out of these programs. And there is sometimes an administrative burden that goes along with them and keeping up with the structure and following it. But there are also resources to support organizations as they think about adopting an apprenticeship program. So in that summary, did I miss anything? Anything either of you have to add?
I think you did a great job. That was incredibly well said. You're a good student.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Clearly, you've got great experience in this, and I really enjoyed our conversation. So I really appreciate you being here today, Matthew and Mace. Thank you for sharing your perspectives and insights with me and with our listeners.
Thank you so much. And Mace, it was great to learn about your program.
Yeah, Matthew. And I'm going to look up the IAA. Very interested in that now. And it was good to meet you. And you also, Greg.
Thank you both very much. And to our listeners, thank you for joining me for this conversation with Matthew McKenney and Mace Gehrman discussing small and medium-sized manufacturers' perspectives on apprenticeships. Thank you so much for your time. Have a great day. Stay safe and healthy. Thank you for listening to Shifting Gears, a podcast from CMTC. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and post it on your social media platforms. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast directory. For more information on our topic, please visit www.cmtc.com/shiftinggears. CMTC is a private nonprofit organization that provides technical assistance, workforce development, and consulting services to small and medium-sized manufacturers throughout the state of California. CMTC's mission is to serve as a trusted advisor, providing solutions that increase the productivity and competitiveness of California's manufacturers. CMTC operates under a cooperative agreement for the state of California with the Hollings Manufacturing Extension Partnership Program, MEP, at the National Institutes of Standards and Technology within the Department of Commerce. For more information about CMTC, please visit www.cmtc.com. For more information about the MEP National Network, or to find your local MEP center, visit www.nist.gov/MEP.